Did you guys ever make a scarecrow in your life?
No, what? Who does that?
I did it. I did it one time.
Where did you grow
really?
Up?
Really?
I grew up in Pennsylvania, but my cousins had a house that had like a bit more land, and there was like an orchard adjacent to it, to it, and so we had like a bunch of space to run around and do whatever, and we decided to build scarecrows one October with some old clothes, and it was fun. I had a lot of fun making them scarecrows.
What was your scarecrows wearing?
Just some old clothes.
Filled
some old clothes with some leaves, so.
I was thinking something like very specific, like, I don't know, like a halter top, a choker, a Bohemian skirt.
Something for the fall season. Really just bring it in.
You guys ever made a scarecrow?
I'm from Indiana, so it's a pretty standard tradition.
What is it?
At the age of 13, every boy is tasked with making a scarecrow.
And then burning it, right?
That represents their biggest fears. Yeah, what? It's kind of like...
Is it like a farmy bar mitzvah? Yeah, right?
You dress it in whatever you think represents like you don't want to become. So a lot of times it's like a fancy businessman or like a person with a Bluetooth headsuit. And then you go out into the field and you go, "Yeah, scarecrow, yeah, what? I want no part of you." And then you burn the entire cornfield down. And if the scarecrow also burns, you're blessed with a good life.
Hmm. And if not, like you turn into a corporate shill. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm getting the hang of this.
I think if I remember correctly, you're supposed to burn scarecrows in Indiana because crows actually hold several positions in office.
Weirdly enough, not Department of Agriculture. You'd think it would be that one.
No, they're wheeling and dealing in the finance department, guys.
From normal to occult, really.
Oh, yeah. It might be fake news, guys. It might be fake news, but I heard Mike Pence might be 30 crows that teamed up.
30 crows in a scarecrow.
I would like politics a lot more if everyone was just birds in a big coat. Because then I'd be like, yeah, this is great. I can get behind birds. I really can. Like, especially if you're crows and
there
stuff.
There was that weird time where Pence gave a speech and he was like, "I have all these things to say about abortion and women's rights, and also, can people please keep leaving small piles of corn around? please, small piles of corn, just like around randomly, but not on the road, please. Not on the road, please.
I prefer dry corn, but well, I'll take wet. Wet is good.
Yeah, that's
we will
fine.
Take whatever we can get. We are Legion. We are Mike Pence.
Do no cream corn. I cannot stress this enough. I am not 30 crows in old clothes.
I'm pretty sure. Sam the Eagle from the Muppets is Republican, but I would vote for him.
How? Okay.
He's a military.
I want to talk about all the Muppets'
man.
Political affiliations.
He's a military
now.
Man.
Okay. But I don't like the way that he says you are all weirdos, and
he does.
I think that that's not very inclusive. You know, I know that the Muppets are weirdos, but I'm on the weirdo side, if that's the case. And he's the one that's, like, kind of separate from that. I think he'd be a good leader, but I don't like his policy.
I wonder if we could soften him with, like, a good VP. I wonder who we'd put up with him, though.
Snookums. Okay. Well, all right, so you bounce out. Definitely, Snookums. Maybe.
Okay.
Well, all right.
Scooter is the solid VP pick, man. He is
Scooter
the guy
is really
who's
good.
Running the show.
Oh, my God. Scooter is really, really good choice there. Holy shit,
that's basically, he's basically the VP of the Muppet Show. Kermit's the face. He's the president.
You're right.
I think the rival ticket, though.
Let's hear, it's probably the two old dudes. What are their names? I can't remember their names now.
Statler and Waldorf? I think it's one of them. No, you know what it is? I think it's the male pig from Pigs in Space.
Oh, no.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
no.
Sure,
like,
sure.
No one really is super into, but they have to just kind of go with
Rizzo
it.
The
and
rat.
Then also they got Pepe. I was going to say Rizzo. I think they got Pepe the Shrimp to get like the span. The next
I fucking love Pepe.
Okay.
I would vote for Pepe. Yeah, totally.
So Electric Teeth, Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem, all super progressive.
They're Green Party.
Oh, sure.
I think they're probably Green Party.
You think they're Green Party?
Yeah.
Okay, because I think Sam the Eagle is actually like either neocon or like libertarian
for
but
sure. Yeah,
maybe, right. I think who are the conservatives of the Muppet Party?
Hmm.
Miss Piggy, Miss Piggy, I think, is a stealth one.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's actually a good point. I was going to say
Miss Piggy could be.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I don't know if the conservatives hold enough women values for Miss Piggy to get on board with that.
You're right. Yeah,
she's
okay.
The type of person that if you get in her face, she's gonna push back.
She's an independent woman. Yeah, you're right.
But I also see that being something of a detractor, where she won't be able to see that other people don't want to be in her position. So I would think that she would lean more conservatively than we might expect.
I think you're right. That's true.
I think conservative is a good bet.
Fozzie is maybe.
No,
maybe?
I was going to say Fozzie. Gonzo, because he's got a like weird sex perversion, but he hides it.
No, Gonzo like totally has his own like anti-war album out there somewhere. He is definitely of the hippie generation. I'm seeing it.
I think Ralph is a swing voter. Ralph is like you can put him on either party. Like he's kind of like, I just want to have a guy I can drink a beer with, but also he kind of cares about like dog rights.
Right,
he's got a jazz side,
so you know.
Yeah, there's a little rebellion.
I want to break this whole thing down so bad. Skeeter is an amazing pick, though.
Skeeter is great.
Really good one.
It's Scooter, right?
It's
Wait,
Scooter.
We're thinking of Skeeter.
No, Scooter and Skeeter. Skeeter is the sister.
Is the sister from? Isn't that from Muppet Babies?
Does she only exist in the Muppet Babies universe?
Yeah, I think so.
What happened to her?
She was just created for the Muppet Babies.
No. Oh my God, guys! That means Skeeter never lived past infancy.
If that's canon, then what happened to Skeeter?
That's what I'm saying. She didn't make it past age six.
Holy shit, that's dark.
Oh my God. Oh no.
Maybe she's still with that nanny.
This got really dark.
The nanny like kidnapped her and took her away.
Nobody mentions it. I mean, I guess they all grew up together, so maybe they don't quite remember. But like, he lost his twin. It wasn't just his sister. Scooter and Skeeter were like the same.
There was an episode, it's a lost episode of that show, where the nanny did join a cult, and she started trying to get all the Muppet Baby kids to join the cult with her, and Skeeter did get into it. She was real into it.
Oh.
I think the cult was revolving around, if I remember correctly, Paul, it was revolving around something magical in the closet.
Yeah.
That there were like portals in the closet that could take them to faraway places.
Right. They wanted to get back. I think because they couldn't get back to the Indiana Jones world, and they wanted to get back there.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to get back to the
and
Rolling
she was
Rock
doing. Yeah, Indiana she was trying Jones. To do some like blood sacrifices, and she saw Indiana Jones 2, and she was a little. You know, she got a little too into it. She was doing a little Kali Ma.
Yeah,
I think Nanny took Skeeter with her. And Skeeter was never seen again because she went to Sea Org.
Yeah, maybe there was like some... I can see cultism, because then I can see why they pointedly avoid talking about it.
Yeah.
For as much as we don't pay attention to Scooter and his overall story, I think that Skeeter would be a large part of it, if only a little bit, because Muppet lore goes back so far and so long that there would be a photo somewhere or like something.
Well, I think we got to scan. We need to scan the movies and the shows now, and we need to really look and see if there's any like missing posters or like a milk carton or something like that with her on it.
There's some missing Muppets. I mean, Robin hasn't been seen. Nephew Robin hasn't been seen in like 15 years.
You're right.
He was lost when he went to what is that? Emmett Otter's. Wait, is he in? I think maybe Kermit is
Emmett
just
Otters?
An Emmett Otter. I think Kermit's just in Emmett Otter's. I think I made that up.
Yeah, I don't think Robin is.
Robin is missing, and we need to find him.
He went with the Fraggles. I bet you
that's
anything.
That's where he
because
went. That's
yep. He made friends with the
what? No, the Fraggles don't cross over
Shut
with the Muppets,
up.
Do
you
they?
Haven't seen
Are
a
you
Muppet
an idiot?
Family Christmas.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
The
with
best song
wow.
of Christmas. Pass it on.
The Fraggles are in Muppet
yes,
Christmas.
Muppet
yeah,
Family Christmas.
What?
They go and they find the rabbit, the Fraggle hole, and they go inside and like just immediately, Robin is totally engrossed in this world. They gave him like a special pebble that he passes on to Grover.
Yeah,
it's a big deal, man.
Whoa.
And they
whoa,
eat the
whoa,
Dozer
whoa,
shit.
Whoa, okay.
They eat the Dozer like castle things, you know, little sticks. They love them.
No, Fraggles
I know
are
the Fraggles are.
No,
we know that.
The Muppets eat them too.
No, the Fraggles are the most hippies out of the entire
way. They freaking okay, yeah.
The Dozers
okay,
are the conservatives because they're
maybe.
Hissing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in that scenario, the Dozers The dozers are just trying to do their job.
Hey, and don't forget. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay, they're exploiting the land there.
And that's okay, true, but like, the Fraggles, their entire song is about work your, or like, you know, dance your cares away, and whatnot. And the dozers talk about work your cares
another
away.
Another day, worry for
yep. So I think that there's the, I wouldn't even consider it a liberal versus conservative movement. I would talk about almost like a youthful devil may care versus the reality of corporate life.
Mm,
this
right.
is the utopia of what it is. All right, so guys, a few things are going to drop on you right now. They're going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
All right. Factoid number one. Who do you think performed Skeeter for her first couple seasons? But Howie Mandel.
What?
What?
Howie does it. Canadian comedian actor voiced baby animals, Skeeter, and Baby Bunsen during the first two seasons of Muppet Babies.
He's a treasure.
Right? I want him to bust out that voice.
Skeeter voice.
I mean, I've seen him do Bobby, but I want to see Skeeter.
So now knowing that Howie Mandel is apparently OCD about being clean, I forget the exact term for that, right? Do you think he hated putting his hand in that crusty Muppet? Do you think he was just like, it was torture?
I don't think he touched a Muppet. It was a cartoon.
It was a cartoon.
And I don't think he would ever touch a Muppet.
There's also live action puppets.
Well, that's only in The Muppets Take Manhattan, right? It's a flashback.
I think so.
That's where it
and
starts.
Skeeter wasn't there.
Yeah,
only Skeeter.
Okay. Okay, sure. Fine. You want to know who replaced the voice of Skeeter to make it real fucking weird?
Let's hear it.
Frank Welker, voice of Megatron.
Yo, that guy has done hundreds of voices. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, he's a legend. But, like, who are these people voicing Skeeter?
The girl Muppet. The little girl Muppet.
The little girl Muppet. They have the little girl Muppet. Scariest robot man they got to fill in.
I had really problematic, this is a total segue, but for voice actors, I found out that the person who does, if you guys played Zero Escape Games, the Zero Escape franchise, which is like Virtue's Last Reward, and then there was the recent one, which I forgot the name of, Zero Time Dilemma.
It was very complicated.
They're amazing games. And there's this really awesome girl in there, and her name is Fi, and she's just like, she's so cool, and she's funny. She has this great voice. and I looked her up, and I was just like, who does this voice? And I looked up that person, and, you know, down the rabbit hole from there, and she's the voice of Nanako from Persona 4. And
what?
I had really bothersome feelings, because I love those characters very much, but I love them in very different ways, and I felt like being attracted to Fi, therefore by proxy, made me attracted to Nanako, and then I felt gross. Like, I was just, no! You can't be both Nanako and Fi!
I mean, the Muppets have a bunch of really weird cast members. Did you know that for a season, Sweetums was voiced by Charles Manson? Not people will talk about that. That for a while it was just Charles Manson in that costume
walking
around. You
know what? I would believe it because he's sort of that way.
Yeah, that whole episode
Sweetums
of the Muppet Show.
Real funny, Chad. He had a mother and an unborn baby murdered.
Oh my God.
That's real funny, Chad.
I mean, Sweetums did because Sweetums ate
funny,
him,
Chad.
Because Sweetums put him in his giant
mouth.
Now
we know what happened to Skeeter. I mean, she just made friends with Charles Manson and.
Welcome
this is a podcast
to Goose
called Goosebuds. Welcome to Goosebuds. We're a show where we talk about Goosebump books and give them the love that they so definitely deserve. I'm one of your hosts, Chad Quant.
I'm Paul.
I'm Dominic.
And
we have a special very guest.
Do I introduce myself? I don't know. I was like, do I just jump
introduce
in?
Introduce yourself. Yeah, tell us about yourself.
I am Mika Harper, and I am apparently very aggressive.
Passionate about Muppets.
Yes. And I'm passionate about many things, including Goosebumps, obviously. And I'm an independent author, and I mostly work in horror, so this kind of goes up my alley.
This is right up your alley because this is, we actually do talk about Goosebump books. I wanted to talk about the Muppet multiverse for so long, but that's for another podcast. This is actually like a horror book.
It is.
Yes.
It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, you were really passionate about this book, so you must have requested this, Nika, by the way, right?
Well, the first one I requested was Be Careful What You Wish For, because I knew what a train wreck that was, because it was my very first Goosebumps book that I'd ever read, and me and my sister read it in, an afternoon, passed it back and forth, and we're just like, I don't get what the whole thing's about, man. Like, it just did not. That was kind of the worst introduction that we could have had. But I had very good memories of this one. And this was one of the few that I read as a kid that really held up. Like, this one is primo of the bunch, I believe.
This is a good one.
Yeah, I had no memories of this one, and it's, like, the best one.
Yeah, it's honestly a really fun young adult book. And it's also a good episode of the TV show as well. I will chime in with that.
Did anyone watch?
This feels like the one they could actually do.
Yeah, this one's, the props are easy, except for the horse. I was thinking about the horse scene. I was like, they cut that. That got cut for sure.
Oh, the horses, man. Okay.
You can't have kids falling off a horse.
Those horses, let's talk about the horses, because they're not related to the plot whatsoever. How did those horses not come in? There's two horses that they ride for a scene, and there's a moment where I went, I don't think R.L. Stine knows what the phrase means or the characters mean, where they go, Grandpa Kurt always called the horses Betsy and Mary or whatever, the old gray mares.
Yeah.
Yes. I guess because they're both old and they're both gray.
Mares.
I was like, yeah, those are literal terms. An old gray horse, like that's what a mare is, you dumb idiot.
Chad,
like,
this might be a good Goosebumps book, but there are some primo R.L. Stine writing moments in this one.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Yeah. So there's a lot of jovial Bob Stine jokes in this one.
There are.
You know what? There's some decent jokes in this one.
Wait, which one was decent? Which one was
early
good?
Early on, Stanley has a misinterpretation of a certain thing. I think a lot of Stanley's dialogue is the way the kids receive it. I think it works, I think it's pretty funny for the rest of the book.
Hey, I have a highlight.
Okay.
Can I read one?
Yeah,
okay.
It's
literally about this because I was like, oh my God, the writing is actually somewhat clever. Like, I had moments where I laughed out loud. And it says, it's going to get pretty hot today, Stanley said, unless it cools down. A typical Stanley weather report.
That one
and
was
I just
good.
Loved
yeah.
it.
That was yeah. I enjoyed that. Yeah,
Stanley.
I feel like it tells you a lot about the character too. Stanley, if you haven't read the book, is a character who lives with Jody and Mark's grandparents.
Yeah, he's a mentally challenged man, and he's a fun character
right.
in this.
Is he?
No,
is he mentally
touched,
challenged,
right?
Or is he just?
No, in your head. This is my first question: is when you pictured Stanley, how were you picturing?
He's mentally
Stanley?
Challenged. He's.
Because he was Lenny from Mice and Men in my
Ooh.
Head.
He's a mentally disabled man. He is.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was like Lawnmower Man.
I consider him slow and weird. I haven't really watched like a lot of those movies or anything. But yeah, it was. The weird part is that he has a kid. And so like,
that's
where's the
what,
mom?
That's yeah, he has a
that's
kid.
That's what I thought.
As soon as they mentioned he had a kid, I was like, I think that's illegal. Like, I don't know that you're allowed.
Well, he did name the kid Sticks.
Yeah, that was also a big warning sign. Then a baby came out and he went Sticks, and they were like, I guess we have to do that.
He wrote it on the birth certificate. You're not even supposed to
God
do that.
God damn it.
Maybe he's a really big Sticks fan. It was STYX, but then he's just like, please,
oh,
God, no.
That'd be so much.
They were still obscure then, so people didn't get it.
Did they ever talk about Sticks' sure. mom?
No,
they never say anything.
No.
About
they do consider the fact that Sticks had to grow up in this little house adjacent to the farm.
Yeah.
With Stanley, and mm-hmm. that I was like, oh, that sounds horrible.
That sounds his entire life, and they say he's been working for the parents, I believe, for a couple decades, right? So that means
he's an indentured
Sticks
servant
was born
to their,
on that farm.
To their grandparents, which is crazy.
Yeah, it felt like a centuries old setup of like, I feel like you need to be paying him and you're not paying
him. He was an indentured servant and he took his revenge in this book.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, I definitely thought about that too, where it's the idea of like, okay, so he lives there. What kind of work does he do other than just make creepy scarecrows and everything?
Uh-huh.
But it seems rather like, I get that you're like, how would you even talk to him? Like, or I mean, how would you define him? Is he a farm hand? How does that work?
Yeah, I think he's a farm hand.
Like,
he didn't do any farm hand
work. Name
well,
of
I mean, that's revealed.
And
why?
Do they just,
well,
they cook for him and everything, and like, and in turn, he just does work for them and doesn't
okay,
get
right,
paid?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
what's
yeah.
the jam there?
I think that's illegal,
I think so.
Right? Isn't that a... Nowadays,
it's,
you gotta give
it's
them something.
Indentured servitude, and it's what this country was founded on. Okay, so let's
it
not.
It was honestly, yes, it was.
Let's not talk about it in such a dark light.
Oh, okay,
dark
so
light.
Let's set this up a little bit. Let's set the story up for a little bit. And yes, indentured servitude is a great system. We should do it
let's
more
get back.
Often. Let's get back to it. Right. is the story is Jody and Mark are going back to their yearly retreat to get back into nature, even though one of them has an allergy to corn
and everything.
Wheat.
Yeah.
They've just and everything. They have to spend time with grandma and grandpa, Kurt and Miriam, and like they're really bummed because everyone's acting weird.
Yeah, like it's a I don't know if it's a real bucolic like summer for Jody at least. What's the brother's name again? I already lost it.
Mark.
Mark doesn't like it, but he brought a bag full of pandering items for the kids to love who are reading it.
30 tapes, a Game Boy, oh, 50 cartridges. That kid's got a lot of games, and they all fit in his backpack.
Do you think he played and finished all of them? I think he didn't. I don't think he beat all of them.
Well, he was chased Game Boy by game. Scarecrows.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, so like they're there, and it's and this is another one of the ones where we're finally going to enjoy where things actually happen, right? Things happen, which is better than just a bunch of dream fakeouts. There's a few.
Well, this one has a lot of things that happen, but there are tons of fakeouts. It's like fakeouts three quarters of the way through.
I would say so. I would say that in terms of the quota or like the ratio, it's far less than all the other ones.
It's less than the other ones, but when it hits fast. I will say, I wrote down a note. There is a one page chapter cliffhanger that has two cliffhangers in a row of they're riding the horses, they see a scarecrow, they fall off, they wake up, they see a scarecrow, they pass out again, and the scarecrow is also dead. It was like a double scarecrow fake out of passing out and waking up again.
I guess the ones like the seaweed grabbing her leg and like the grandmother holding the broom and like those ones were the ones that stood out to me, but I see what you're saying. There was some real danger in this one.
They're told from the very beginning.
That's a typical Goosebumps thing. Like, I would expect that at least there was the dream sequence, you know, obviously. Uh-huh. But I would say, on whole, it was like a 75%, you know, success rate on actual fucking scarecrows coming at you. Like, real thing.
even if they get away, okay, so there's a couple questions. First, how tough is the scarecrow actually going to be?
I've thought about that, Chad. I did.
Do you want to know? It could be magic hay.
Here's what... cursed hay.
I thought about that though. And if the hay is like sinews of
here's
muscle,
how you could have made them
terrifying.
Here's how you could have made them really scary though. If they're like Evil Dead plants, yes, very scary, Chad. Or Evil Dead tree. I think a missed opportunity in this was they should have, and this would have been a cool moment for the kid if the kid had the pitchfork and they were like, "I'm going to stab him and stop him," and then it doesn't stop it because it wouldn't hurt it. That's how you make the scarecrow scary: is that they're nearly undefeatable unless you set them on fire.
They feel no pain.
They feel no pain.
Yeah. But there's like one moment where one of the first scarecrows like maybe attacks and lays a hand on Jody and sticks, poor sticks, takes the scarecrow and just throws it on the ground, and the scarecrow just stops dead on the ground like, you got me. I'm like, okay, so these things are easy. They're training dummies.
Right.
Huh.
I guess they could be strong. So they mentioned early on, right? The scarecrow walks at midnight is said very early on. Two pages in, Stanley is just like driving them to the farm. He's like, "The scarecrow walks at midnight. The book told me so." What? What are you talking about? The book told me the scarecrow walks at midnight. What are you talking about, Stanley? There should have been an immediate conversation of like, "Let me see this book."
Well, I love that this book opens up with Stanley driving them home, and Jody knows he's a bad driver, and she's 12, and she knows he's a bad driver. And the parents sent their farmhand.
Which means that when she was 11, she understood that he was a bad driver, because that was probably the last time she was in the car with him.
Yeah.
So it's even a bigger deal.
So they do that. And then I love that, like, Stanley just immediately starts revealing his master plan, like, pretty early in the book that he's up to no good.
But they never, that's what's crazy thing is, I loved it. They're just dropping it.
Stanley's a weird guy who always says weird stuff, and they just kind of have I think they set that up pretty early on. Stanley kind of just is speaking nonsense all the time.
Yeah, well, I think it's just kind of confusing is how much he said this book, refers to this book. He calls it his superstition book.
That's the best part, Chad, is everyone calls it his superstition book, which, can I ask all three of you, have you ever heard of a superstition book before?
No, if it was like a farmer's almanac and it was super old, that'd
be like
dope.
A book of curses, like, maybe, but superstition book?
Back in farm days, maybe.
I've read some stuff somewhat similar, but I'm also more of the witchy persuasion, so like you can't count me for that at all.
Was it called a superstition book, though?
No.
Because if it's a superstition book, then you're automatically admitting it's all bullshit in there. Why did we write the book?
A superstition book is what you would call a magic book if you were living in the real world and someone was abiding by the rules that the book had set up.
Yeah,
right? To be like, oh, that's my simple servant's superstition book.
Right.
The connotation is that it's fake by the word superstition.
Right.
So he's just like, yeah, it's in my book. And everyone's just like, oh, that's Stanley.
Oh, it's true. I didn't even think about that.
But even Stanley calls it his superstition book, which I don't, maybe he doesn't understand what superstition
means.
He's
also not very smart.
Yeah.
The second thing.
But this book has everything.
Which kind of makes sense. I don't think he gives away his master plan right away. I think it's more, he has the book, right? And, yes. But to him, it doesn't show that he's doing anything. We don't know that he was responsible for these things. He might just be, you know, kind of savant receptive to it. So he could see that these things are happening, but you don't actually know he's behind it until all of a sudden he's just like, yeah, I'm doing it. And you're like, Jesus.
Yeah.
It gets real fucking weird at the end. So, because I feel like the middle part is just a bunch of scarecrow scares, right? Like, it's, you know, ride your horse through a place, the scarecrow jumps out. Sticks, you're probably doing something. Scarecrow's jumping around. Little fake out stuff, right? I don't know what else was in the book, because I swear Stanley would be like, well, it tells me about the scarecrows walk at midnight, and that they love to do it, and it's their favorite thing. But also it has, like, a nice recipe for, like, oatmeal. I feel like it was, like, that kind of book.
There was something about a pine cone being wet. And something, yeah, like, there was a pine cone. It's just like, oh, this is going to be a long winter. And everyone's just like, yeah, Stanley.
Stanley.
I want to see the chapter difference between that. It's just like, you know, finding pine cones and their associated meanings, bringing to death murder scarecrows.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
like, that's the logical.
I mean, this is really just what was in, like, you know, Highlights magazine for kids, all of these topics, like a fun way to get out of a maze. Does no one else know what Highlights magazine
is?
Like,
I do.
Like, Goofus would read the pine cones. And Gallant would bring the... I'm sorry. No, Gallant would bring the pine cone, and Goofus would be the one that would bring the scarecrows to life. Fucking Goofus, dude.
Yeah. Fucking Goofus bringing the scarecrows to life. So he's reading the book. Like, the whole time, the kids are like, something's up. I'm pretty sure I'm seeing scarecrows moving. But also, the worst thing is, Grandpa's not telling us stories, and they're not making us pancakes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All the warning signs are food-related.
The kids are definitely upset about those pancakes.
I will say, that is a bummer. The only thing that I really liked is that the kids at least weren't assholes.
Yeah, the kids were good.
The first book where nobody's a real jerk and the adults are kind of all right. Like, they're not the whole, go back to your room and stop yelling or whatever, like that kind of aggressive parenthood.
Right.
Well, Mark is, like, a bit of a troublemaker to his sister, especially early on. But, like,
Mark's more of a piece of shit to himself.
I think that's just natural. I think that's just it's just enough. It's not like they're just being pieces of shit to each other.
Mark hates himself, and I understand that. You know,
I understand that self-love.
He just doesn't want to be there. You know, he's just going to be cantankerous no matter what.
Yeah,
just a surly small child.
So, just to track the rest of the story, right? So, Jody and Mark are like, man, oh man, we're not getting these chocolate chip pancakes that we always look forward to. Something's up. Grandpa's just really sad. And meanwhile, Stanley continues to read a superstition book at the table, which I think is rude. But also more and more that, like, Stanley is not of a mental mindset to be allowed to have a child and work with heavy machinery.
He moves his lips while he reads, so.
I mean, he's like right. Donald Trump now. Worst. He's got power, right? So now he's just doing whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, I guess
that's
so.
Right. It's always going to come back to Trump. Now that the world we live in, it's always going
to
come up.
This is what the country did to everything now for 4 years.
Like, every episode of SNL, there will be 5 to 6 Trump sketches and nothing else.
Yeah, it's just...
Nothing else. Okay, because I think we almost feel like we need to go to the reveal to explain the plot and why all this stuff is
weird. I think you're right.
Sure. A bunch of stuff happens, typical Goosebumps, where it's like, was that a thing? Wasn't that a thing? And sometimes it is a thing, and it's eerie. But let's get to the nitty-gritty, because it's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Dom, would you like to explain it?
Well, it is... where do you want to start, Chad?
I would just like to go into... At this point, they've seen 7 or 8 like scarecrow encounters.
And Jody is skeptical the entire time. She continues to think that it is
sticks. Yeah,
right. And they've told, I believe, both Grandpa and Grandma, who have worried looks. They told Stanley at one point, and Stanley is saying the scarecrow walks at midnight. That's not good. So they're all kind of aware. But then they're surprised to find out the Scarecrows are still alive because it's revealed that Stanley used his obvious Necronomicon book to say a chant that made the Scarecrows come alive and that he controls them. And then at some point, Stanley decided to, like, basically threaten the grandparents and say, you're going to take care of us?
Well, it's weird because Stanley, it's sort of like a little bit like laid out that Stanley did it kind of on accident and then realized his power, but was scared of the whole situation. So this is where it confused me, because it was like he's scared of it. He's scared of his own power, and but he still uses it to threaten the grandparents, mostly to make him cherry pie.
Yeah. So this is what I was the problem with. There was no usage of the power as signs other than, which is crazy, by the way, that Stanley doesn't like chocolate chip pancakes and would prefer cornflakes.
Well, they're both skinny people. Him and his son are skinny, and I think he likes to keep in good health, Chad.
And as we know, as we know from the last episode, cornflakes subdue sexual urges, and he is a very sexual man, as you can tell by his child.
I had that same thought.
I did too. I have a quote here at the very beginning of the book. This is going to get weird.
Please. Okay.
You look nice, Jody, Stanley said, his cheeks turning as red as his ears. How old are you now? 12, I told him, and Mark is 11. That just upset me. So
Can you read the next line after that, too? The Freudian slip.
He thought about it. That makes 23, he joked.
The Freudian slip, Stanley.
Oh, no. I didn't. He's going to bang both those kids.
It's gross. It's real gross. Oh, no. That freaked me out a little bit.
That's bad. So maybe that's the missing.
He's just a weirdo.
Do you think that's the missing mom, though? Like, she was an unwed farm gal from somewhere, and she was, like, super underage, had a baby, and then, like, the parents just took her away and booked it, and then he had the kid.
Interesting.
I have a special edition of this book with an extra chapter. And sure, here's what happened. There's a prelude to this whole ordeal, and it's Stanley. He's eating a bunch of apples, and he's got a bunch of apple cores piled up next to a tree that he's been eating. He's been eating apples all day. He opens up his book for a read. He's all full, so he lays on the ground and opens up his book for a read, and he says,
"Is this the Scarecronomicon?"
The Scarecronomicon. And he reads. He's reading out loud like he likes to, and he says a magic spell, and all the apple cores they form a apple core woman, and he makes love to her while farting a lot, because you know apples can do that to you. That was the conception of six.
Wow, that's a weird like Adam and Eve analogy with like the apple of like knowledge.
Oh, and
stuff
her name
like
is
that.
Cora.
It's beautiful.
Oh, my God. Fuck.
That was true. Okay. She was hot, though.
That was really good of Earl Stein to write all that.
Really described her.
Chad, I got the...
Very hot.
Or Dom, I got the 2001 reprint, which had a bonus feature, which was a hidden scene that Stanley, where he had a scarecrow orgy he puts on.
Oh, yeah. And he gets his body all, like, scraped up from hay.
Yeah, like,
I only saw fanfic of that. Can you tell me a little bit more about what actually happened?
I mean, well, I think you're going to have to pick up the special edition. I don't know, Dom.
I did read that. I did read this. Yeah,
you can't forget it, Chad. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, a good portion of it is just Stanley screaming, oh God, it's in my holes. Oh God, it's in my holes. But it feels so good.
See, the holes thing did play into the fan art that I saw. There was definitely some... I would penetration, that's expected with DeviantArt. I didn't know it was actually written into the special edition.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's a bonus feature. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, the bonus chapter is called Hate Fever, and you know, you're like, what's this about? What's this one about?
I can't believe R.L. Stein will be on our podcast. I can't believe it.
I can't believe. I can't believe he won't acknowledge it.
his simple character Stanley had sex with an apple core person, and hey, it's just
I mean, I think he definitely made love to them in the barn, right? Like, and both the grandparents heard it the whole time, and they just closed the blinds as if that would block out the sounds, and we're just like, God, I can't wait for our kids to get here in a week.
They have a conversation after they close the blinds. They turn into themselves in the kitchen. They're like, is that how all the scarecrows came to life? Because he had sex with a bunch of hay.
And then he's like, we're definitely putting him on the cornflake regimen.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
No more pancakes for that boy.
No more sugar to get him all wired up, ready for sex.
But it does make sense. Why aren't there so many scarecrows? There are no crows. There's no crows.
They got good scarecrow. By the way,
are cornworms a real thing?
Yes.
I don't know about that.
I feel like there's like bugs.
No, cornworms are 100% cornworms. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
He's made a scarecrow before. Listen to him.
That's true. You did make a scarecrow.
I made a scarecrow. I looked at a cornworm. I had sex with an apple core.
Apple core woman named Cora.
I'm just so amazed.
This was Cora. Yes. It was the same woman. Go on.
Where's your child?
Anyway, here's where I thought things were going, by the way. I thought the cornflakes, because I can't imagine why anyone again would want cornflakes over chocolate chip pancakes. I thought you were going to find out that they were being forced to eat only corn things now.
Because the scarecrows needed
a corn industry. And like to grow and further spread out corn, and they could only exist in corn. Yeah. Mm. So they're like, we need to grow more. You must eat corn and become more corn.
Mm-hmm.
But no, as soon as the cherry pie came in, I was like, that theory is
damn shame.
It's just actually little bits of corn painted red. Just look like cherry.
Everything's just corn. This is delicious, Grandma.
So just to explore Stanley's use of his power. Just remember, Stanley, not a bright man. He seems to look forward to food a lot. So, I mean, if he has power, this is what he's doing with it, is that he's getting the food that he wants.
And he doesn't want to be scared either. He tells Grandpa to stop telling scary stories. It's a pretty innocent power trip that he has.
Did he say that I don't like scary stories? That's why I stopped telling them?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's at least that.
Well, so he has control of the grandparents, and in order to get the scarecrows to go back to sleep, he gets this agreement where he will control what he's fed, and he says the magic words to break the curse or the spell, and it doesn't quite work, right? Because some scarecrows are still walking around at midnight.
Well, that's what I was confused about, was like, it seems like Stanley thinks the scarecrows are all put to sleep, even though he also warns the kids all the time that the scarecrows still walk. But then Styx finds out and goes, we can't tell my dad. But why? I never understood why they couldn't tell him. This whole story, I think,
is about not being able to fully communicate with the people you love. And that's the problem. But this, seriously, though, this whole story is like, if someone just was a little more detailed in what they were saying, because he does that to Jody a bunch of times. He's like, I warned you. And he just keeps saying, I warned you over and over again to her.
Yeah.
If he just followed it up with the second part of that sentence about like why he was warning her, the whole thing's done. That we're finished.
Actually, Jody might be the only good communicator in there. She's just like, there's scarecrows walking around and things are happening and you're acting weird. And everyone's like, oh, well.
Oh, we don't talk about this. I love this book, but
there's just a couple of times where no one takes action when they should. Like, so let's say you're the parent. You're the grandparents, right?
Uh-huh.
First off, why did you even let your kids come this summer?
Why did you allow them to show up there?
Right.
Why? Just say, don't bring them this summer. We have our hands full in the farm.
Right. Yeah, it's cornworms. Like, cornworms everywhere.
Yep.
Just don't come.
Also, maybe let's... Also, burn the scarecrows. Like, I mean, right? Like, if they're only active at night, just go out during the day and flame them down, and you're good.
Yeah, it's not like they're going to knock the torch out of your hand. They're just going to burn if they do.
They were active in the daytime, though. That even though they technically walked, there were still a few that were like, you know, just little day trippers. They were going everywhere.
I would be worried, but I wouldn't worry coming out with a shotgun and hitting them one by one with range. And be taken care of it.
Yeah.
And then I kill Stanley, right?
I want to see
that. These are farm people.
They don't do that.
They're practical.
Right.
Yeah. They don't ever snatch the book out of Stanley's hands while he's just reading it at the table and going, I am the witch now. They don't ever do that. There's a bunch of just, but like the plot, once they know that the scarecrows are active, no one's really doing anything until, by the way, for some reason, Stanley started to come across as like Michael Richards Kramer to me. And I wanted to read this
part. Let's hear it.
where like they finally tell, like, you can't tell my dad, says Styx. Don't tell him, he'll get real mad, even though he clearly wants to know the scarecrows are under control. And then as like a comic, like, it's almost like a comedy beat. After they've kept him from finding out, then Mark walks out in his scarecrow costume for a prank.
That's a Quentin Tarantino moment of irony and just horror right there.
That was beautiful. Oh, I loved that.
It would have been a Tarantino moment if Stanley had turned his gun and shot Mark.
True.
That would have been the Tarantino moment, and you'd been like, oh God, oh no, it was actually Mark in there the whole time. That would have been like the Hateful Eight thing, right? So immediately, Stanley now sees a fake scarecrow, even though there's been real ones this whole time. And he starts, the page just read like nonsense. It went like this. No, Stanley sputtered. He pointed a trembling finger at the scarecrow. It walks. The scarecrow walks. No, Dad, Styx cried. But Stanley didn't hear him. Stanley had already dived back into the house. Styx started after him, but Stanley reappeared in the doorway. As he stepped aside, I saw that he was carrying the big superstition book. The scarecrows walk, Stanley screamed. I must take charge. I must take charge of them all now. His eyes were wild. His entire skinny bodily was trembling. He started towards the cornfields, totally crazy. Styx tried to calm him down.
Totally crazy.
No, Dad. And then they run into the field, and then Styx just watches as his dad activates more scarecrows.
There's like this throwaway line where she's like, maybe the things he was saying froze him there. And I'm just like, wait a second, hold on. Can you, like,
I thought they were doing something weird where you're gonna find out that their spirits went in the scarecrows or something. Again, like, because they said cooler. There was two. Yeah. Cooler thing. Yeah. Right?
There's a page in this book where it's just bad writing for a whole page.
Do you have a page in mind?
It's page 152 in the PDF that I have. And
oh, crap. Let me go through this.
I just have to read this page to you guys because it doesn't advance the plot, and I'm pretty sure maybe it's just a couple of takes at the same situation.
I'm looking at it right now.
Stopped beside his father. He turned to watch the scarecrow's approach. What are you doing? He asked his father. You have to do something. They're alive, Stanley shrieked. Alive. Okay, so then Grandpa Kurt jumps in. What does the book say? Grandpa Kurt demanded. They're alive. They're all alive. Then we jump ahead. Grandpa Kurt, Stanley, listen to me. He grabs him. Stanley, what does the book say to do? Alive, Stanley murmured. They're all alive.
Stanley,
what does the book do? Grandpa Kurt demanded once again. I don't know, Stanley said.
but they know. What at that point.
What does that page do for you?
Why don't you just pick up the damn book and read it yourself?
I really wanted there to be some explanation of like what the book was. I know the mystery and vagueness is sometimes the key of horror, but I really wanted the kids to read the book at some point and
some
like
cool pictures.
See that it was like an old, like, you know, hedge witch's book or something, or I don't know, just like something to make the myth of what this is bigger and understand why.
Am I crazy?
The scarecrows.
Or do they not describe the book at all? That
I don't
book
think they
is
do.
Super
I know they don't.
Powerful and cool. Shouldn't it have like a glowing cover or like something interesting going on there? But they were just like, yeah, it's just Stanley. He's just reading a book.
That's just old RL. That's just old RL. Just like not selling another book that isn't a Goosebump book. He's like, fuck it. Yeah, it's a haunted book, but I'm not going to describe it.
All the video games you guys want, but no books.
The way he described it, he didn't describe it. I just assumed it was like an old book that had magic pages in it, and Stanley had torn out all the other pages and just slowly over time put in like torn out penthouse pages in there and just like and like wild scribblings of names for dogs, like just things that he kept putting in it and making in his notebook. And at that point, the only thing left was scarecrow control commands.
It's my book.
It's my book. It's my superstition book. God. So They fight the scarecrows.
Well, the best part is Mark, still dressed like the scarecrow, controls all of them for a brief moment. And you think that's how it's going to end.
Oh. He's running around in this thing, in like a perilous situation, when he had complained previously that he couldn't see out the eye holes, but he's still wearing the entire thing.
Right.
Like, if you're scared to death, the first thing I would do is just, like, get the hell out of there.
Yeah, ditch
so
that shit.
So he's just like, oh, by the way, he still had the costume on. And I was like, wait, what? No,
Right. I didn't understand. Also, they never gave a reason other than just because he looks like a scarecrow is why the scarecrows listened to him. But it made me wonder, if it seemed like it should have been whoever utters the phrase controls the scarecrows, or like they were going to do a whole thing of like reveal that Mark has the book in his hands. They're listening to Mark. Oh my God, how great. Because even when Stanley has the book, he doesn't seem to want and have the scarecrows awaken. He doesn't seem to want to use them against the grandparents. It seems like he just wants to put them back. So all of his threats have been, you know, bluffs.
Well, he's scared of them as well.
mm-hmm. scared them as well. So the whole thing's just been this dumb charade that they're all doing. I thought they were going to be like, does that mean the Scarecrow's listened to Stanley for a while because he's a dumb idiot that looks like a Scarecrow? Like, were they seeing him in his, like, blue jean overalls? And, like, oh, he's, like, one of us.
He looks like Stephen King in what's that movie he's in? The horror Creep anthology. Show. He's Creepshow, yeah.
He looks like Stephen King in Creepshow. They don't say that, though.
No, that is interesting. I was wondering if he actually controlled them at all in the first place. Ooh. Because, like, he has a childish view of how to do things. And, like, right. if you had a special power and you were, like, a kid, what would you do? Of course, you'd get your way all the time. So it's just, like, I'm wondering if he's ever really believed that he can control them, or if he's just using that against the grandparents. Because, like, hey, you know, free power, I guess. They were just like, Stanley, put that back. And he's like, okay. But he really doubts himself the entire time.
I think you're right, because he uses them for childish things, just to get his food that he wants.
Yeah, like, you what happened the first time to make it such, to make the Scarecrow such a threat? And for, of course they would blame Stanley, because he's the one who's going to be like, I read the thing in the book, but that doesn't mean you control it. So I have a feeling that he's far less powerful than he thought, but he's putting on airs because the preconceived notion that he is so powerful.
Right.
So when they tell him to stop it, he's like, oh, sure.
This is again the problem. Stanley uses his power for such shitty things. Like, if there had been a single moment when they described the nights where they just hang out and Stanley gets to control what's on the TV, or there's like a weird thing where like grandma has to rub his feet or something, just like,
oh.
if he's actually terrible,
gross.
But that would actually then make me understand why they live in this state of fear. Like, a box of cornflakes is $2. Stanley, they could just buy you cornflakes.
Guys, yeah. not to double dip, but I mean, this is just like Trump, you guys.
please explain.
He is scared, and he doesn't understand the power that he has, and he's just doing what he wants to get what he wants. And anytime anybody ever questions him, he's like, "I don't know. Shut up! You're lying. You're this is sad. You're bad."
You know, I would actually consider a person for president if during the campaign, during one of their big speeches, they held up a leathery book and said, this is my superstition book. And if you don't vote for me, I'm going to make the Scarecrows come alive. If they just said that, probably gets my vote.
Well, that's
that
true,
happened. That actually happened in, oh gosh, what's the country?
Europe.
I can't remember the name of the country. But their leader for a long time was
Myanmar,
like,
right?
Don't try to usurp me, because I will put a curse on everyone. And that's the way it was for a long time.
It's a solid strat.
It's a good strat. It really worked.
So Stanley doesn't have any extra control of the Scarecrow.
Neither does Mark when
they
Mark
think
does
Mark,
the thing.
Mark for a second, and their first idea isn't make them all go up onto the posts again and tie themselves up. It's take your head off, and they'll probably take their heads off, too.
Oh, man, that would have been great, because Mark could have sacrificed himself. He could have crucified himself at the end, and then, like, Jody would have been like, he finally did something this summer.
He would get his own chapter in the Scarecrow-nomicon.
Oh, man.
I mean, if this is a Disney movie, he doesn't take off his head. He starts dancing. There's a dance number with all the Scarecrows. They lead him to the barn, and they set the barn aflame, and all the Scarecrows burn.
So what you're pitching is a little bit like the Mask Cuban Pete scene.
Yes.
Where Mark as a Scarecrow would start dancing to Cuban Pete. He loves that Cuban beat.
Mm-hmm.
And chick chicky boom, chick chicky boom, chick chicky boom, all the way into the barn, and all the Scarecrows follow him in a conga
yep.
line.
Yes.
And they burn it down.
Yep. And then he goes, somebody stop me.
Well, no, and then as the barn's burning, he goes, smoke it.
Oh, God.
Yes. And yeah, Flubber's right? there, too.
I could not shake... I don't know if you guys remember one of the best of the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark episodes or issue, like little stories, is of a Scarecrow. The books, it's a little short story of a Scarecrow named, like, Zeke or something. And it stalks this bully, and then at the end of the book, you find out that, like, the bully's been turned into a Scarecrow because his clothes are on a new Scarecrow. There's, like, a jersey, and you're like, oh, my God, that's him. He got turned, and, like, straws coming out of his neck. I kept thinking they were going to do that with, like, we let you come here, kids, because the Scarecrows need more Scarecrows, so you're going to get turned into Scarecrows, or whatever.
Yeah.
So are Scarecrows just naturally creepy, then? Because, like, there are a couple stories about that. Another one is in the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark book, where it's about Harold, and that one scared the shit out of me as a kid.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I think. That's what I'm thinking of, the Harold.
Yeah, there's a Harold one from there, and then you said, you know, the show
Harold the Improv form, or sorry,
yes,
stupid joke.
But I have to wonder, like, why are scarecrows so scary? Are we crows?
I think it's the corn. I think it's actually the corn itself.
But it's such an easy thing to do. Like,
well, it is just like an effigy, right? Of like
of a human. And meant to be scary.
I kind of think they're spooky. Like wicker men, sort of. So it's like, you know, you kind of get that like idea of like of a person being burned at a stake kind of from them. Yeah. Oh, that picture's terrifying. Oh,
sure.
That illustration is terrifying.
The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark Story. Yeah, all the illustrations are like horrifying.
No.
Right? Because
I'm reading this.
Yeah, I think it is. You're assuming someone's dead. I think that's if you think it's a real person, then that's really
scary.
Yeah,
it's also about bleeding because the ink.
Yeah, and Harold's got a weird belly. I don't like his weird belly either. Freaks me out.
Yeah. So
that's a human flesh.
So when I was a kid, like scarecrows just automatically are kind of creepy. Which I think is actually a good premise for the book. I think that if this one, like, I'm glad that this book was so well written.
Right. As,
comparatively speaking, let's put it that way.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, relatively.
It's one of the better Goosebumps that are out there. And secondly, that the premise is actually pretty good.
Yeah,
it's definitely. It's not a crazy cat witch person who shows up out of nowhere.
Right.
What was her name? Like, so, I don't know.
I want to say, like, Sarah, Matilda.
Oh, you're talking from Be Careful What You Wish For?
No, from Monster Blood. Sarah, cat witch?
Sarah Beth Sarah or something. Beth.
Like, it's not too outlandish. There's a weird book, and scarecrows are actually walking. So, And the scarecrows are creepy. They're just legitimately are.
They're creepy because they're field puppets. And field puppets are terrifying.
But it could be anybody.
This is bringing it back to Muppets, man.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, here's my theory. If you put a scarecrow in a line of sight without any corn, not that scary. Honestly, like you put him in a parking lot and that scarecrow comes at you, you're like, get out of here, scarecrow. I'm going to push you over.
A crow wouldn't even be scared of him there.
Yeah. A crow would not be. I mean, if it's in corn, you don't know where it's coming from, and then maybe
it could have really long legs.
Looming.
Yeah.
Like just. They're very tall and kind of just spooky walking through. Yeah, yeah.
They're like 3/4 of them are legs, and that's terrifying.
I think if Stanley had actually been evil, as much as I liked him being a conflicted character, he just was such a dummy. If he'd actually had some sort of I've gone full evil from the book. I need to like continue to feed my blood magic.
We didn't talk about the end.
I'm going to turn you into
scarecrows.
About
the end where he brings a bear to life that's going to maul everybody.
Yes. But first detail is everything's resolved, right? Like they just get him. How do they get him destroyed? Right?
They set him on fire. Sticks just shows up with fire.
They set him on fire. Yeah. Those torches we saw earlier.
Thank God for
just
Sticks.
Burn him.
Yeah.
He's
I
really
love
the only meaningful one in this book.
They don't take the book away from Stanley. They let Stanley keep the book. The next scene is like, we had breakfast the next day.
They don't ever take the book back. You're right.
They don't take the book. They don't break his lips so he can't talk anymore.
Yeah. And then they're like, I was the only one in the other room to see what happened as Stanley got to mutter more words from the book. They should have been like, no, Stanley, we're going to get you something simpler. You're going to read the Hardy Boys and like it.
Look, we got these all from the thrift store. They were a dollar. It's great. Yeah. Just enjoy something that's not going to kill everybody.
But he brings a big stuffed bear in the living room to life. And then I guess the bear just eats them.
That's what I read it into it as. That's what I thought.
Well, here's the other question.
Maybe they said
Would that be that bad? Other than some sharp teeth, worst case scenario, the bear puts you in his mouth and it swallows you, but then you're just inside a big hollow bear.
You're basically inside of a love sack at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it has no bones or muscle inside of it. It's basically like another scarecrow.
Or digestive acid
or anything.
You can
pass those teeth, you're fine.
What
if
you wore it as a suit and you could just like walk around? And you'd be like, whoa.
Yeah, then you control the bear.
Dude, you're like
I'm the bear now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Also, I mean, we don't know what propels these. Obviously, they just seem evil. They're attacking everything, even though they haven't really hurt anyone. They're just going to people. Maybe the bear will just come alive and like wander into the woods and live a normal life.
That's
why are the scarecrows doing what they do? Why are they evil?
Yeah, we don't know.
I wanted a motivation.
Yeah, we don't know what they want.
Yeah, what
Communication.
Can we start a dialogue?
Communication, guys.
This is a book about communication. All right, this is... I really like where that... This is the actual theme now.
It is.
Communication.
You know what the twist...
If they had used the book... Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, go, you know what the twist ending of the thrift store ending is, right?
What's that?
Like, Stanley, here's some books we got in the thrift store. Just read these. They won't hurt anybody. Just read them. Book on the top of the pile. The Bible.
All right. So here's something that I've noticed about the Goosebumps books, and I'm going to do the slow intro to this. The one thing that I always remembered from The Haunted Mask was that over and over again, the girl who wore it said that it smelled sour. And that always stuck with me. And then in rereading them nowadays, the word sour always comes up at least once a book.
I thought that while reading this one, he said something is sour in this one, and I was like, wait, that's like
the milk of the cows has gone sour.
Oh, the milk of the cows has gone sour. That's one.
Yeah.
But he actually, like, this is, it's specifically in terms of when you're encountering something bad. So, like, the mask, she put it on her face, and it smelled sour. She smelled sour through it.
Yeah.
I think that there was one in Say Cheese and Die. With this particular one, she gets attacked by one of the scarecrows, and she said the hay smelled sour.
Yeah.
And, like, I was literally going to go through every book and find the word sour in them, because I think in some ones it doesn't show up, but in a majority it does. And I'm wondering if it's, like, a certain key code that it's either in his, you know, headspace, R.L. Stine's headspace, he's like, okay, everything bad smells sour. Like, everything in the Goosebumps world, all the monsters and everything, they all have a funky, goosebumpy smell.
Sure.
Or it could be that you're finding the ones that are written by a specific person.
Interesting.
So it could be this special, more than anything else, that one particular word would link it. More than the styles and everything. So, and it's a lot easier to track than the other ones.
We need to start.
We
got to start, like, marking down the ones that are specifically sour. This is sour one.
I Googled this. Nobody's ever picked up on it. But, like, as a person who writes all the time and having that strange, weird, backwards memory that I did about The Haunted Mask, of course I've always had it more or less on the top of my mind. And so it's one of those, like, apparently nobody has really heard of it. Now, I happen to be a purist, and I do think R.L. Stine wrote all the books.
Okay.
Because some of them suck. Like, legitimately do. And as a person who would pump out a book every month, I can totally understand how it's like, okay, here's my book. I don't care. I just get it fucking done. Like, that one's a trash book. I'm going to wait on the good ones. So it's more about the quantity that he does it that makes it a little bit easier for me to grasp that he could write shitty books.
Right.
because of the fact that, like, you know, the more you put out, you know, the monkeys and the typewriters thing, right? So if you create a whole bunch of Goosebumps books, a couple of them are going to be really good. The rest are going to be like, what?
And there are a million Goosebump books, so it's possible there is one really, really good one.
And I have a feeling that he actually did. But I don't deny that there is a chance that he didn't. And the sour might actually feed into that somehow.
Now, that's interesting.
All together.
And well, the haunted mask is a good one.
Yes, exactly. I think there was another one in Say Cheese and Die,
and so
which
this
was also
one.
Pretty
this
solid.
One, this one's good, too.
So if it's a good, let's say...
It's not just in the good ones. It's in the shitty ones, too.
It'd be interesting if it was a certain... If there was a ghostwriter, that was their mark. That'd be really interesting, too.
Mm-hmm.
What also may be interesting is if you're saying or suggesting that R.L. Stine has created, like, a horror note, so to speak, throughout the whole thing to say that, like, the world of his magic and ghosts and his books are tied to a sense or a smell. Like Guillermo del Toro, I'm totally gonna have the numbers wrong, the colors wrong, but he said before that, like, the colors of the ghosts in his movies mean different things, and it's consistent across all of them, where, like, I think red is like a murdered rage, and, like, white ghosts are ones of sorrow and who died tragically kind of thing, or whatever. It's like a code. So across all of his movies, I might have those emotions linked to the wrong ones, but, like, that it's supposed to cross through all of his films, even if they're different universes, to set a thing. So maybe just bad smelling things is Arlstein's version of that.
But specifically, I'm ready. Sour smelling.
Sour smells.
I'm ready. I'm ready to elevate this conspiracy theory to the next level.
Hell go. Yeah,
who
go.
Is
Let's do it.
Sour Sally, the ghostwriter of all the Goosebumps books?
Wait, her name's Sour Sally? Like
that's
a garbage
the code
pail
name.
Kid?
That's her trademark.
Sour Sally.
Sour Sally.
Hold on.
Wait, what about the protagonists of the ones that are? Are they female? Are they markedly? What if
are you
there
saying
was,
that like girls have a sour sense?
Oh.
No, I'm wondering if that also gives to the idea that there was a different writer.
Oh, like RL didn't write the female ones.
Yeah, perhaps? Maybe. Well, yeah. I think that he probably did in a lot of ways.
Yeah, careful what you wish for. That's a girl.
I don't think there was anything sour in that one. I've noticed it when it happens, and it happened more often than I was used to, enough to see a pattern. But then the ones where I didn't, I would go through the entire book and be like, well, that was a waste of time. And then be like, oh, wait, did I see, is there sour in it? And like, I have these all on Kindle, so I can't actually go through and search for them. So I'm really, really wanting to actually put together a document and then and analyze it all out to see how this goes. I'm that nerdy.
I don't think R.L. Stein was prepared for this level of like searching through his books. And I'm excited to see what the future holds for Goosebumps.
Yeah, so next time he does another AMA, I can like pop up in there and be completely ignored.
Yeah. Don't mention us.
We were joking about him not responding to us, but I think the whole us saying that he didn't write half of his series probably had something to play into that.
Well, because he listens every episode. RL, how you doing, buddy? Really excited. By the way, RL's writing Man Thing.
I heard, dude, Chad, that confirms that he knows what X-Force is, I think.
But or they announced that RL's going to be writing for Marvel Comics a new line of Swamp Thing books.
Yep.
No, sorry, Man Thing. I always get him confused.
Man Thing.
Marvel's Man Thing.
Yeah,
Swamp Thing
is
DC.
Swamp Thing.
Man Thing is pretty great, though. I actually say Man Thing's cooler because he gets
a Mega Man Hero thing.
No,
Man.
Yeah. No, Man. They're both. It's just DC and Marvel taking their characters from the other ones. I think Swamp Thing came first.
Yes, and he's way better.
No, Man Thing is like Man Thing. All burn at the touch of the Man Thing, and he's like a cool. He's like a nice little plant man who likes good people, and he can teleport.
That sounds rad. I like plant men, but why is he a Man Thing? Why isn't he a plant?
He should.
Thing?
Yeah, he should be a Swamp Thing already existed. He's a thing man.
Yeah, he's not a Man Thing. I think he's a thing man.
Man Thing is
he's not
thing.
Groot.
Man
Groot
Thing
is a man
cuter.
Thing.
Man Thing is cuter than Swamp Thing.
Fair.
Swamp Thing is like the Toxic Avenger, and Man Thing's like
you haven't
kind of
seen
like a cute...
Swamp. You haven't read the Saga of the Swamp Thing. I'm sorry. He's pretty cute a couple times.
Fine.
There are some cute moments. There are some very cute moments. Tom's right.
Everyone has their moments, you know. Just
but RL's writing now. We'll have to read them. Thank you for all the shout outs, everyone on Twitter, by the way, who told us. But
yes.
So he probably. Do you think he either knew about X-Force or?
I think he knew what X-Force is.
Or they approached him about doing Man Thing, and he's like, comic books.
At the moment when we didn't know if he knew X-Force, it was early in the books, and we were wondering if he was trying to make his universe not have pop culture references. But in this book, he references Game Boy, MTV, and Nirvana. So
but he's
he knew
all over
X-Force.
The place with the references. I don't know. Sometimes he makes stuff up. I just could
I
see him, though.
He's got some experience writing some plant monster people, though.
Yeah,
he
does.
Stay out of the basement.
Yeah. If there's not a Stay Out of the Basement reference, I'm going to be real mad. I just can see him, like, he gets the job from Marvel, and they let him go to the Marvel archives to read everything else Man Thing's done so he can bone up a little bit. Uh-huh. And he's like, what's this? X-Force? I think I invented X-Force. No, this is mine.
What if he only became aware of it because people were sending him letters going like, you like X-Force too? And he's just like, what is all of... Okay, right. I'll just go with it. Like,
thanks to Goosebuds. We called
yes,
it out.
We blame ourselves.
We started it. We put it in the zeitgeist.
You're welcome, Stein.
God damn it, yeah, Stein just love us.
Enjoy the job.
Nika, I love your conspiracy theory, though. Thank you for submitting
that.
It's fantastic.
I've been sitting on this one going like, sour.
I shit you not, while I was reading this one, because that word stuck out to me too, because I was thinking about, I forget what the exact phrasing of it is, but I think it's, I fell hard on my hands and knees, yep, or something, yep, like
that. I thought
that.
Of that too.
That's one that's, that it's a lot in this. There's like three moments of it in this. One of the other podcasters, Goosebumps shows, talks about that.
And fell on your hands and knees. I believe another one is let out a groan escaped my mouth, lips or something.
Yeah, yes. That happens in this one too. Yeah.
It came that out just as sounds it shitty though. That's just like, that's easy writing.
Yeah.
But I mean, it could just be he's using this as a phrase over and over again, and sour is his favorite descriptive word. It could be
precisely,
that too.
Precisely, but he uses it in such specifically weird ways. And so that's what I was assuming. But then I would think that it would be, you know, everyone has their favorite words that they like to use a lot, and it becomes like your vernacular as it may be. So that's why this one was so particular. I actually remember I wrote a poem once because I associated an indescribable sour smell with something had gone wrong. And I actually wrote a short story and I said that like the girl's breath smelled sour, and it was because of that. So like, because it had always stuck in my mind. So somehow I learned that strangely sour scented things is bad juju. Just stay away from it.
I like that. It's a good call. So question for the group.
Yes.
This is a pretty good, I say this is a pretty good horror story. It has some flaws, but a pretty good horror story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How would you make this better?
I already put mine out there. I think you gotta have the scarecrows be damaged in some way to show that they're not able to die.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. They're a little more indestructible.
Yeah.
I get that.
I think you gotta have a scene where scarecrows are eating chocolate chip pancakes and enjoying it.
Son of a bitches! They come.
That's why we can't have them anymore. These fucking scarecrows.
Yeah, the grandma has to feed them the pancakes now to keep them at bay.
And she's being whipped with one really long piece of hay.
Or it's like, you know, bears at a campground where it's just like, if you start making the pancakes, then all of a sudden all the scarecrows will be like, oh, and you're like, oh no, just get rid of them. They don't like cornflakes. Yeah, they're like, sick of corn.
Yeah, the kids could have had a scene where they start making them in the back room and in like the kitchen, and then they see them coming at them through the door, and they're like, no, we only cook corn in this house because the corn smell scares them.
Interesting. So it's like wouldn't milk in Ernest Scared Stupid. It's like milk to the trolls.
Yes.
Meak.
So Meak. Scarecrows scare crows. Crows are scared of scarecrows, and scarecrows are scared of corn.
It's like how dragon type moves work on dragon Pokemon.
Yeah, I've never understood that. I'm like, what?
Doesn't make any sense.
I wish some crows would have showed up. I would have had a scene where they are bailed out by crows, where defeat the head scarecrow.
I had a similar thing I would have pitched. Not crows, as great as that was. I thought the only reason we even introduced them, I thought Styx was going to show up and save them, not with torches, but riding on the back of the two old gray mares, and the horses were going to eat all the hay out of the scarecrows. Like, the horses are just going to eat them. Yeah, but no, but they just like chomp down on them. Horses will eat anything. They'll eat them. They'll eat the whole body. And then just like, yay, you're eating them, horses. And they just watch for about a good 3 hours as the horses lazily eat the scarecrows. And that's the end of it.
And then one scarecrow tries to get up, but he clops his ass. He's like, clop.
Yeah, right on his sack head. Yeah, on his sack ass head. Yeah, clops him.
That would have been fixed. Nika, do you have anything?
I would have more emphasis put on the book.
Yes.
There's something about the book that is really special, and the book's interaction with Stanley in some way. I would like a little bit more pushed on that, because there's a lot of question marks there. Also, like, again, what do the scarecrows want? Well, you can figure out what that is if you figured out more about the book. I think that's the pin that would have held this together so much better. And it's a great book in itself. Like, as for Goosebumps fiction, this is great. But if we wanted it on its own, I think that would be the key point.
I mean, if I was building the Goosebumps Marvel Cinematic Universe, this would be where you would say that the book was like, you'd find out it's written by like one of the witches in another book or something. You're like, oh wow, crazy! This whole world's all smaller than we realized.
And then you can kind of figure out, like, you know, not just how it got there, but the idea behind why are the scarecrows? Why is there that spell?
Yes.
Because the other ones are all like, oh no, this pine cone is moldy on one side. Well, okay.
Right.
Yeah, I would have loved it if it was like a golem control spell. Like it was used by old
what if all the what if all the spells druids? Just, what if all the other things in the book just tie back to like when you can use the scarecrow spell? And it's like, it's going to be a long winter. You're not going to be able to use that scarecrow spell for like three more months.
I thought about that too. As like, if they just hold out through the fall, they kill Stanley, right? Like, once there's no scarecrows anymore, like you're good.
Yeah, you're good.
Then scarecrow Stanley, Stanley has 3 months at best to let this ride out.
And why personally... were there so many? Why were there so many scarecrows? Like, there was more scarecrows than there were, like, rows of
cores. Oh, they did seem to hint that they were building more. Yeah. Remember that? There's in the barn, like, they find...
a scarecrow factory.
Yeah, I was like, oh, God, the scarecrows are making more, or Stanley's making more to up his numbers. But no, not really.
What the dicks, right, man? Why are you doing that?
Or if they had made a new scarecrow... to fight the other scarecrows, and it was like Real Steel, and it's like we put all of our favorite things, and it's like a big smiley face on it. It's like, go Nathan, I called you Nathan, and like Nathan's
no, his name is Scorn.
Scorn, go Scorn, Scorn the Destroyer, get him Scorn. And you just see like Scorn like rip other ones in half, and he goes down heroically.
I'll see your corn ass in hell.
Oh my God! Wait. Or it's like Real Steel, where Mark is in the scarecrow and they animate it, so he's inside the robot, but he's telling him how to punch. So Mark, guys, Real Steel is like, okay, it's actually underrated.
And should I see that? Okay.
It's like, all right, it's based off a Twilight Zone episode. No one ever talks about that. Like, it's a thing. But like, Hugh Jackman has to get into the robot. Oh, sorry, this is confusing. In the movie, they don't do this, but in the Twilight Zone episode, it's basically revealed that they...
This is getting so convoluted.
So convoluted, right? Wow.
It just went three layers.
No, sorry. Like the guy in the Twilight Zone episode, they get a fighting robot, but then the robot breaks down, so the dad's a former boxer, and he gets in the robot suit, and they trick the robot fighters into letting him think that the dad is not in there. So he's like, he's going to use all his pro wrestling moves. And then he gets his ass just kicked. And it ends on this bummer note of like, well, the dad's almost dead and we have no money to rebuild the robot. I guess we'll die. But you do that with Mark and the scarecrow.
Okay.
Right? Okay. Mark fights inside the scarecrow like a mech. And he's like, yeah, hey, punch, a fork stab. Yeah. And he kills them all.
I love it.
I'm really excited about that.
I mean, personally, I would do the crow thing, killing the head scarecrow. But then, out of the corn, post credit scene, out of the corn, comes Cora, my wife. Mom, crows come back, feast on the apple cores. Oh, damn you, crow!
It just goes right back to the barn and starts like making new scarecrows. Like, oh.
So basically, a Bride of Frankenstein solution. Cora comes in.
Oh my God,
that's beautiful.
These are all great fixes. That's beautiful. I love these.
This is wonderful.
We did it.
We did it. Yay! We did it, guys. Yeah, I think we should wrap up the episode there. Guys, thanks again so much for listening. Thank you to all of you who always reach out and help us out. Tell friends about the show. We see you on Twitter. By the way, you can follow us on Twitter at GooseBudsPod. We always love to hear your thoughts. We see people like at The Root Bowl or at That Retro or TastyRC, Greg Gross, The Bionic Kraken, The Real Kropinski, Pairstrike, a bunch of you guys all telling friends about the show.
Yeah, don't forget about at Scorn. Scorn, our boy.
Scorn, our new boy Scarecrow, the perfect boy. So, so good. He's only got like 1 month left, but we love him.
It's okay. He can be reborn.
He'll be reborn the next year. We'll do the spell again. It's a thing. Besides on Twitter, you can support the show by telling your friends about it. It means a lot. And also, like we mentioned last time, we launched our Patreon, and boy, oh boy, holy shit, we are blown away by all of your guys' support. It means a ton. Thank you so much. Right.
That's like, amazing. Congratulations, you guys.
Thank you. Oh yeah. Nika, you are also have a Patreon. You've been at it a little bit longer. What's your Patreon, first of all?
It's Patreon/Nika Harper. So just my name, just as simple as can be. And I mostly write small fictions, short stories, little things along those lines, and mostly in the horror slant. So if you like spooky things, then go there.
It's pretty good. We will maybe ask you for some hot Patreon pointer tips afterwards.
And that's
indeed. Nika Harper, right?
Yeah. Nika H-A-R-P-E-R. Super easy. I'm also that on Twitter as well, so I tweet a lot more than I should. Let's put it that way. So
I can attest to that, but that's fine.
If you like drunk politics at 4 in the morning, do I have a Twitter for you? It's mine. I'm the one.
But again, seriously, it means so much to us. For those of you who have pledged and supported us, we hope you enjoy the extra stuff we're going to start kicking your way. We're recording our bonus for the $5 level episode for you guys very shortly. And can I just call it out here? We're going to take care of it. Someone pledged for sexy pics of Paul.
They did.
Lobbed that out there as a throwaway joke, and you guys ran with it.
Holy shit. So we're going to make sure that's resolved in a way that everyone's satisfied.
We'll figure it out.
We don't want nude photos of Paul circulating on the internet.
Sexy Scorn cosplay.
Sexy Scorn cosplay, maybe.
Chill him with Scorn.
Because then you just, like, it becomes, like... like a romance novel where it's like the ripped up shirt is just like open and V-neck and like shows your chest and everything.
And haze coming out.
And haze coming out of the arms, but like the chest is bare.
I want to be the woman being held by Scorn on the romance novel cover.
Okay,
I want to be within his arms.
No, I like that. I like that.
Yeah. The photo shoot's also called Feeling Scorny. That's also what it is.
So it's the horror.
Sequel, the sequel to Scorned Up, right?
Yeah, exactly. By the way, if you guys want to go and support besides that $99 level, which will probably not exist much longer, you can go to patreon.com/goosebuds. Thank you guys all as much for your love. What else? What else we got? Go to our subreddit, reddit.com/r/goosebuds. Talk about the episodes.
At Goosebuds on Twitter.
At Goosebuds. What else?
At Goosebuds Pod, actually.
At
right?
Goosebuds Pod. Pod. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else is cool. Guys, one more thing to plug. Go please check out the Remember Hour on Polaris. It's something I've been working on for a while. Post-apocalypse puppet show. We're putting out episodes every week for a bit. I helped write some of the episodes and created it. Dom did all the amazing illustrations. Paul sent spiritual energy.
I had nothing to do with it.
Paul sent spiritual. Nika's just now hearing about it for the first time.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated.
It's a puppet show set in the apocalypse future, trying to understand what video games were back then and telling the wrong things. It sounds crazy.
Oh,
check it out. It's very charming. But go check that out on Polaris for the called Remember Hour.
Hell yeah.
Guys, any other last thoughts?
I want to thank Nika for being on.
Of course, Nika.
I wanted to thank you guys. I was going to wait until last. I truly love this podcast so much. I discovered it kind of late. Chad, you'd already invited me on before. I was like, what is this Goosebuds thing? And this, I have literally read through all of them as much as I could because I ran out of books or like I had not read along with you guys, and so I was like, oh god, there's like 5 more episodes left. I have to read all these books before I listen to the episode and all this other stuff. I've been listening along for ages, and it is a complete pleasure to be here, so thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. We'd
thank
love to have you
so
back
for
maybe for an adventure episode. Yeah,
a little adventure.
Oh yeah, we're due for one soon. Yeah, again, Nika, thank you so much. What's our lesson for this? We need a lesson to leave out on.
Communicate.
talk to your Scarecrow brethren.
That's what we gotta do. That's what it's all about, kids.
And if someone's got a scary book, take it away from
them. Yeah, the book away.
Take more books away. If books scare you, take them away and burn them. That's what we're saying.
Yes.
And if an apple to life next to you, do not fuck her. Whatever you do,
fuck her. Do it.
You're gonna have a son.
But
Sticks
was cool.
He was cool.
No, definitely fuck the apple woman. I'm wrong.
Okay, burn books, fuck apple women. Burn books, fuck apple women. That's the lesson. Guys, thank you so much.
You can be a piece of shit and still fuck an apple woman and it will be fine.
That's the lesson.
That it is.
All right, we should go. Guys, I love you all. Thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Goosebuds is brought to you by the strong, strong support of our members over at our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/goosebuds to support the show. Some of our supporters include these wonderful people. Hollis Hornbeek,
Alan M.K. Jenkins,
Benson P.,
Asim Zaman,
Evan Brower,
Brian Fernetton,
Kale Clinton,
Mickey C.,
Fred Atkins,
Nicholas McCaskey,
Dappyow, a.k.a. The Cheese,
Benjamin,
Joe Casilla,
Nick Hayes,
James Romano,
Glenn Eisenhuth,
Blackbird 92,
the incorrigible Catface Meowmers,
Fernando Espindola,
Jacob Dow,
David Cron,
Jared Mason,
Brian Wood,
David Lee,
Kevin Boucher,
Will Scott,
Zhang Keefe,
Taylor Dierks,
Gabriel Garcia,
Ryan Kolka,
Derek Dalton,
Sean Lyons,
Nathan Dolezal,
Kevin, just Kevin,
Melissa McPhee,
Cameron Murphy,
Clayton C,
Sven Stormbeard,
Jonas Blatterman,
John Jimco,
Joshua P. Robertson,
Grace Nickel,
Paul Grasso,
Mike Lantieri,
Tim Healy,
Matthew Sadler,
Kyla Tharp,
Ed Burdick,
Nick Hinkle,
Buddy Morrill,
David Cole,
Chris Birch,
Aaron Manchester,
Joe Scott,
Joe Harbison,
Heath Robinson,
and the Ford Theater Reunion. Thank you all so very, very much.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.